And then there's another spiral pattern here, of course, not just the sunflowers, but the spirals of the snakes themselves. So that's two kinds of spiral movement. One that brings the opposites together, and then one that circulates the light. And then this up and down movement forms around the representatives of the four functions, as we spoke of before. And it's as though this serpent movement is carrying the dynamism of consciousness upward and down, actually. It's circulating. But then it also results in growth at the same time. And finally, from these three come the one, the gem, human consciousness. And you'll notice that each of these serpents' heads are eggs. And in alchemy it says that the four elements were said to be in the egg. So it's almost as though these elements between are part of that alchemical idea of the four elements originally having been contained here in the darkness. And the gem, in my mind, is Jung's blue starlight. That's on page 354, mm-hmm. where he talks about the dark and gold treasure and its blue starlight, mm-hmm. which never made a bit of sense to me. Really. Why a black and gold treasure? You know, what is the black and gold treasure? And how does it relate to the blue starlight? Well, I feel like this image is just showing us.
Mm-hmm.
What he meant, at least partly. So then that dark and gold treasure and the blue starlight would be the snakes and their blue gemstone. The snakes themselves are the black and gold treasures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their blue starlight.
Wow.
So we could say that that blue starlight is birthed through the interaction of the godly serpent, which is the black, the human consciousness, which is the yellow snake, and the star woman. Remember, Jung said she gave birth to the black serpent. And I thought, what? How? Well, if I could understand this image totally, maybe I would understand, because there she is carrying the black, the head, or the meaning, you might say, of the black serpent as a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the star woman herself, she's like a grail, because she's carrying a god image, the inner star. And she's Aquarius because she's a container for the god image. And that gem, that sapphire, is in the shape of a drop. And the drop from heaven, or the star woman, is the soul, Jung tells us on 353. He said, that drop from heaven is your soul. And so here I think we see it. This gem is also a drop. Jung tells us that's the soul. And in my mind, this field of lava is where his process started. All of that terrible emotional upheaval. And it's also the death of the old, and then it forges the gold.
ahead. Could you just talk a little bit about the images within the circle, the triangle, and the square?
Yeah, I don't know why I was. I guess I was just. I tried to make this image as simple as possible, just as a sort of shorthand for us to look at when we think about the Red Book. You know, of course, one could go into this image and elaborate it fantastically in a painting in many ways. So, with the idea of elaboration, the unconscious wanted those plain geometric shapes. You know, the original unity, I guess, and then the threeness, and then the fourness. But each, I think I'm getting, perhaps I skipped this part, but each of these not only refers to the spiral growth of consciousness, but also they themselves show spiral growth. The quartz crystal has an inner spiral growth. That's how it grows. Of course, the fiddlehead fern, we all know that spiral. And then the snail. So these are all factors of spiral growth. And of course, human consciousness, we know, is a spiral growth. So all of them are representatives of the spiral growth pattern. So really, there are so many themes of the spiral within this whole work, you know.
It's bizarre. Good bizarre.
Okay. So the star woman or star mother, for me, is Aquarius also because she's a water bearer. She bears water in her womb. And she too participates in the spiral movement because of her downward dive, which if you follow her momentum, would be a spiral. In my mind, her spiral diving foments the circulation of the light on the serpent path. And that is what Jung comes to in The Secret of the Golden Flower. It's all about the spiraling of the light and how that builds up the inner body. And in our case, it's the gem. And as I've already said, I guess, she births, where am I? Okay, I'm losing my place here. Now, and the image continues with this Eastern theme because in Kundalini Yoga, there are two serpents going around the chakras called Ida and Pingala. And Ida and Pingala are move up the body like along Sushumna, and these four elements are on the lines of Sushumna. So once I made this, I realized just how much it was like Kundalini Yoga also, you know, in keeping with our Eastern theme. Because in Kundalini you have these serpents that circulate the light also. And it's as though the opposites are balancing themselves in these four functions. Like each kind, it's like these are the four functions are like the balancing point for the opposites, where they come together. With the serpents meeting at the critical junctures. And then, as I said before, the serpent eggs, each head is an egg, too, are the black and gold seeds, which he calls the dark and golden treasure. And the gem, or the and drop, is the blue starlight. Now, in alchemy, the sun and moon are known as two seeds. So here are sun and moon serpents themselves are two seeds. At least according to Jung, where he calls them the black and gold seed. That's what I think he's referring to when he talks about the black and gold seed. Let's see. And so the star mother, if we want to call her Aquarius, in my mind, she would be bringing the milk of Pegasus. That is her own breast milk. Pegasus is her perinatalum. And that means in astrology, the perinatalum is the constellation that rises with the zodiac sign that it's attached to. So with Aquarius rises Pegasus. Now perhaps you remember that Jung carved a woman drinking milk from a from Pegasus. Right. Yes. Balling it, I guess. Right? And I've always wondered about that, but then I realized after looking at this image that and looking back in my notes on alchemy, that milk is the creative element of the feminine. That's how it's termed in alchemy. And then I think she's also like Sophia in that she appears with double spirals. If you remember from Aurora Consurgence, those of you that studied that, we found that Sophia was associated with the double spiral. And then, of course, just in Jung's book, she carries a cloak of stars. I guess the pattern of his state. Jung's own pattern. But I would say that I do think the image does say something. Maybe I don't know quite what it is yet, but it does bring together Jung's blue starlight, the black and gold seeds, his star woman, his eggs, his godly serpent, the drop, the gem, and the golden bird. It brings all of those together in one image, which for me, they were just sort of laying there at the end, being real important, but I didn't know what to do with them. And also in this image, I think we have several depictions of the divine feminine. We have she's like a Sophia. She's like Aquarius. And then, of course, we have the axiom of Maria, too. You know, with the 1, 2, 3, and out of three come the four. And I guess, for me, one of the big things was that it revealed what the black and gold treasure was, and how that black and gold treasure related to the blue starlight, and then how she gave birth to the godly serpent, that black serpent. How did she do it? And, you know, I suppose in astrology we could call this a stellium. A stellium means when all these stars come together at once. And, you know, perhaps that stellium is that Jung himself, his soul, midwife the head, or the meaning of the dark element, which is exactly what he's done for us. If this is Jung's star and his star mother, then they've midwifed this, the dark, the meaning, by meaning I mean light, of the dark serpent. And then the fact that his gem has a hidden star, I think, sounds very Jungian too. And then also when I look, and then I thought about the Child of Revelations. The Child of Revelations was hidden above as a star. Perhaps. We know he was hidden in heaven. And now, maybe the star mother is bringing him back down to earth. But we are the individual containers for this star now. So it's not the star of Bethlehem blazing above, but it's a hidden star being brought back down to earth. Okay. And then, all right. Now, as I wrote this, I opened. I remembered that I had made a picture that I thought related to Jung. the idea of becoming. And this is my painting, Becoming. So I randomly opened the Red Book, and of course it opened right up to page 266 where he talks about becoming. And he says, becoming belongs to the heights and is full of torment. How can you become if you never are? Therefore you need your bottom most, I would say, since there you are. But therefore you also need your heights, since there you become. And then on 250 he says about becoming, he says, the symbol becomes in me. My deep interior is a volcano. So now I look at this image much differently. And here I see the Star Woman again. Here she is. And now perhaps she's gathering the stars from Jung's middle way, the path between his heights and his bottommost. And maybe here she becomes pregnant with his essence of being, the gem drop star. But I feel that this was her first appearance in my work, even though I didn't know what she was at the time. So for me, a whole group of images was emphasized at the end of the book, and they could be formed into a whole. But did Jung see this? Did he think it? No, I don't know. He refers to The Secret of the Golden Flower, and that's a book about the circulation of the light. And this seems to be the theme of our image, for sure. And when you look at this, I think it would be better to think of it as a shorthand, like a place to start dreaming about the Red Book and its meaning. And, you know, it's as though from each element or group of elements, a whole other world can spring. And so, it's like Jane said, so there's a Buddha in that gem? That's what I mean. That's the starting place. Anywhere. And Kathy had sent me, I was going to read some comments from Kathy, since she couldn't be here, my image buddy. Okay. Now, after she read my presentation, a poem arrived for her by Rilke. Mm-hmm. How you say it? Rilke. It's called The Buddha in Glory. And it says, center of all centers, innermost core, almond sweetening in its self-embrace, all of this out to the stars, in the fruit of your body, we greet you. You feel how little clings to you now. Endless is your shell, and there too the strength. It is summoned by the radiance of the full and glowing suns that wheel around you. Yet those stars will be outlasted by what you have begun. I think she's thinking of the stars wheeling around, the Star Mother. And also she tells us that she likes the way the snake's head and the pregnant womb are the same thing. She says it appears to her as if Logos combines with Eros and produces the blue sapphire, which then becomes Jungian psychology. It's a lunar pregnancy, she says. The darkness bringing fecundity. And then she sent another poem after she concentrated on these. This is by Rumi. It says, we begin as a mineral. We emerged into plant life and into the animal state, and then to being human. And always we have forgotten our former states, except in early spring, when we dimly recall green again. That is how a young person turns towards the teacher, how a baby leans toward the breasts without knowing the secret of its desire, yet turning instinctively. So humankind is being led along an evolving course through this migration of intelligence. And though we seem to be sleepwalking, there's an inner wakefulness that directs the dream. It will eventually startle us back to the truth of who we are. Well, I know that's a lot to swallow all in one bite. I apologize for that.
No, thank you. Very, very helpful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Does the process begin to make a little?
Yes. Basically, you pull it all together.
I really didn't do a darn thing. You know?
It's like you pulled it all together.
It did. I mean, I just went out there and sort of stared at my computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the little light that went off in my head, or it's a body sensation is what it is. Whenever something that comes across the screen that wants to be in the painting, I feel a little tug right there in the gut.
Oh.
It's a little ee. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You intuitives know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That little pull, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel that little pull, then you know the unconscious wants something, so you just take note.
Take dictation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly so. But it was really valuable to me because at the end of the Red Book, I feel like there were just so many amazing images that popped up, especially that Star Woman. It was like, wow.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
We got to know about her. You know, what's she all about? And then the book ends. It's like, no, more. Because it was the first really big feminine figure for me in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's Salome, but you know, she's like a snake sometimes, and nobody trusts her, and you know. But then the Tsar Mother comes, and she has the power to give birth to the godly serpent. So yeah, the Tsar Mother. Well, when we were reading the book, every time I came to something in the book where I already painted such a thing, I made note. And there were a whole bunch of notes in my book and explained a lot of my paintings to me, but that's a whole nother talk.
Wow, yes. Okay.
But I found a lot in the Red Book that explained the individuation process as we seem to be going through, which I thought was really a valuable thing. Okay, so that's it.
Thank you very much.
Well, do you have a question or two?
Please.
In the choice of your colors and your additive colors, why didn't you use primary colors?
Those are the additive primaries.
This is color theory that I don't understand, probably. So.
Okay, so green, blue, and red are the primaries of light. Primary colors of light. Like red, blue, and yellow are the primary colors for paint, or we call that subtractive color. For light, we call it additive color. And the primaries for additive color are red, blue, and green.
This is color that actually comes from the sun.
Or we produce it in our TV sets, or how?
I guess fire would give off different colors, huh?
Well, visible light, anyway.
Or just a prism up to sunlight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be an example.
Yeah, visible light is made of those primaries.
So in a prism, don't you get yellow?
You get yellow. If you added all of those colors together, you get white light. So it's like a reverse prism.
What would make yellow?
A red and green.
Would make yellow.
Yeah. Think of it this way, Carl. If I had three colored lights, one green, one blue, and one red, you can even do this at home, man.
Mm-hmm.
With colored bulbs, if I would shine them all together, they'd make a white light.
Yeah.
If I just had a green light and a red light, and I overlap them, there'd be yellow where they overlap.
Okay, well, my problem is I'm coming at it from the point of view of painting again.
You're thinking of subtractive color. Okay. This is additive color.
I'll get rid of that.
I didn't even
care. Okay. All right. That's fine.
Yeah, light and paint combined differently, right?
Yes.
That's the crux of the issue.
Yes.
Right. Which I've never understood.
Yeah. My other question is, I almost want the lava at the bottom, where all this comes, as opposed to the Star Woman, which is where all this goes, in a sense. I could see it better, or maybe it was merged more with the egg of the golden head of the snake. I know it's there as a kind of a pool at the bottom, out of which everything comes, so it's part of the directive.
You know what? I'm not sure. That is where he himself was at the beginning.
Right.
But then the Star Mother was always up there. And it's a circulation.
Mm-hmm.
That up and down.
Well, yeah, I agree.
You see what I'm saying?
I almost feel like I personally am so aware of the lava of the world that unless you want to say the lava, basically, unless saying basically the lava is transcendent. I don't...
Transcendent.
It's transcended by the Jungian process, by the
process,
and it really doesn't matter anymore.
No, it's not transcended, it's brought into the process.
Okay.
Because it turns eggs into gold, and it makes the sun flow, and it lets the moon come down.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It nothing is transcended. It's all incorporated.
Yeah,
it almost looks like that golden snake. I love the face of the egg because it looks like it's drinking it.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like what?
It looks like it's drinking the lava.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, your emotions. You have to.
That is what it's
drink
like, Jane. To have a big emotion is like drinking lava.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So I guess I'd almost like to see a lava a little more. Just have it a little more. But I don't know what that would do to the rest of it. You know, just as a notation.
So let's see, how much does it appear in the printout image? Yeah. Let's see, Jane. Well, I see the lava pretty well here.
Yeah, actually, I'd be feeling better. I guess it's on the wall here.
It's on the wall. It's really hard to see.
Oh, yeah. It gets faded out there.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
and of course,
I just see
no artistic tweaking was attempted here.
Yeah, I see it better here.
You know, if I wanted to do any artistic tweaking, I probably spent another 4 years on this image.
I see that it's darker at the top, and the whole wall is darker at the top, so it's getting faded.
Back here, it's not that way.
It's all right.
You're in a bad spot.
I'm getting a reflection
spot.
On the window here.
Yeah, you're getting
a bad spot. So, yeah, it looks fine. I had trouble seeing the lava. Okay.
Isn't that funny, Carl, because when I gave you this image, you didn't see the lava at all. Do you remember that?
When I first looked at it, but that was...
Yeah, when you first looked at the image, you didn't see the lava at all because you said, well, what about all his intense emotions and all that upset? And I said, well, that's in the lava. And you go, what lava?
Well, that was because it ended the image in front of me when we were talking.
Still, you didn't see that lava.
I was just trying to remember the computer. Okay. I call us for lava.
Carl, we're going to have a little more redness down there for you.
No, it's fine, though. I see it. My issue.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I myself go to images like this, and the things that maybe bug me tell me things about me. Sometimes, or telling me things about what I'm doing, you know, that year. I know, it's funny. I'm hoping this says more about Jung than me, but...
I think you did a fantastic job of capturing the meeting and a separation as a cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Circulation.
Circulation.
Yeah,
which is a separation, a synthesis, and circulatory. And they're linearly mutually exclusive processes. But imagistically, you'll find a way to trail them.
That was for me, sort of a little revelation.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, how to make those spirals.
I have no idea how you would do that, but you did it.
And, of course, I was given that image on the very first day I came home from seeing the in your class, and you gave me that sheet.
Mm-hmm.
I came home, I went to my machine, that's the first thing that popped up in email.
Wow.
Was the Dubai airport with those sunflower spirals.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. Now, who says the unconscious isn't paying attention to us?
True.
Evidently, paying much more attention than we know.
Yeah, it's scary. That sunflower... double spiral is amazing. I'll never look at a sunflower again the same way.
No. Well, yeah, it's become a bit of somewhat of a theme for me too. But you know, I think Jung said a lot to us at the very end of that book.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was almost going to skip that, but really, thanks to you guys, I pay particular attention to it.
Good. Because I think there's a lot there.
There's a lot there.
It's like there's a whole world that we can jump off
mm-hmm.
from. Right there.
You talk about all of the scrutinies, or just the very end of the scrutinies?
I guess, you know, those towards the end of the book, I don't know if it's all in scrutinies, but all those images that came up, you know.
Yeah, it's all in scrutinies.
The black and gold seed, mm-hmm. the black and gold treasure, the drop, the blue starlight, the star woman herself, the godly serpent, all of those things. You know, I couldn't put them together in my mind as to, well, you know, how do they fit together? Why are they there? And I think the image just, you know, gives us a place at least to start thinking about mm-hmm. why they're all together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this is very helpful for me because all those images were really overwhelming. Like getting to the end, I thought this is never going to end because there's more and more.
Well, exactly.
But this has helped tie it together.
Well, good. It helped me a little. I mean, I know it's symbolic, you know, not really saying anything, but
it says everything.
But the symbol is saying something that I feel like I can start thinking about.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Amazing. Thanks,
Edward. Thank
you.
So what do you think, Carl? Have I shown that it came through the unconscious?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
No question.
Yeah.
Nobody could will
intensity
it.
To
no ego could will it.
Is an intensity of gold that matches the head of the snake. The intensity of color that matches the head of the snake. You know, maybe I'm talking more from an aesthetic point of view, but you know, it's...
You know, I think you're right, though, Carl. It could use some emphasis. You know, looking at it, it's hard not to look at something with an aesthetic viewpoint if you're an artist. Or you
well,
know, as
that's,
far as...
That's during your next 4 years.
Can you give us some light?
Yeah.
Well, did anyone else have any reactions they wanted to share?
Now that I've burned you all out?
I have some reactions, but I don't know if I want to share.
Why? I had one.
You go know. Ahead.
No, you share first.
Stand up. Sometimes when I can't, the way I sometimes trying to figure out things when I can't quite get them as to write poetry. Yeah, this is with the understanding that I know nothing about writing poetry. I've never seen a poetry class. So one of the images that was really important to me was the spirals that touch and don't touch. So I like this. The Bible says the way is narrow, yet everyone says they are on the narrow way. I do not seem to have any way, weak and buffeted by forces beyond my control, often unable to make big or little decisions, I feel lonely and afraid. Would loneliness indicate being on the narrow way? I remain disoriented. I can't believe I am on the narrow way. That would surely be an inflation. I can't believe everyone else is either. And then something happens. And for a moment, I notice that I stand between two infinite universes at the point where these universes touch and don't touch. And the narrow path is to notice and to stand in awe. And it is open to us all.
Ooh, beautiful. Lovely. Oh, wow. Thank you.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
It is.
Very
nice.
Can you email us? Or would you want to
would
share
you?
It?
Sure.
That
would be great.
Yeah, yeah, that really fits.
That reminds me of that picture that was on Gary's book. You know, that old guy looks out into the DM.
Oh, uh-huh.
That
we
cut.
Yeah. What I like about that is the location is that you... is that if you stay in touch with those, you know, tips and those cones, the way it will be defined is in a very linear, in a sense, and narrow. As it moves on, perhaps in a spiral pattern, you know, and it's a beautiful image of how consciousness, in a sense, is the, or what are you talking about consciousness? I'm not thinking it's just consciousness. The consciousness can come through it, a sense of wholeness at least. Which is so full and also narrow as well.
I love what you say about feeling lost most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I feel lost a lot.
I know.
Yeah. And that's why I use some of them for about the middle way as just so mm-hmm. where I feel like I am, which is it's like walking a very narrow path. You know?
Yeah, so easy to fall off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's lovely, Anne. Thank you.
Yeah, it really was.
Is that the same reference as straight as the gate?
I think it was the narrow path.
It's a biblical reference. Straight as the gate, the enters into heaven, or
something like that. Yeah. Back from my Bible days.
No clue.
Anyone else?
Mine isn't related to that, so maybe I should do that at a different time because we're out of time.
Let's hear what
is time? What is space?
Okay, another 5 minutes. Okay, this is totally different from what we've been experiencing here. Gary mentioned about the mass that oftentimes when someone has a dream about the mass, it's talking about their sacred, the path that they need to be taking. And so, as I'm going through this, reviewing, I came across that again, and so I Googled, or I went to my files and folders for things, which is so nice, isn't it? You can just type in something and everything with a mess and it comes up. So anyway, I found it, which I hadn't found it before. It was a dream that I had in November 13th, 2001. And this was a year after I started working on my book. And I was just at sixes and sevens. I mean, I was so lost. And the research was nine-tenths of my work at that time. And I just realized that, well, let me read this and then I'll comment. I am in an ancient church. There is a priest saying Mass. I am watching him go through the ritual. Other things happen next, but I don't remember them. That happens to me a lot. Then I am told that I can say Mass. I am so excited, but I'm sure of exactly what to do. I put on black pants and a black shirt. The faithful come in for Mass. I come in and start, like he did, on a side altar. I have a white vestment on, and I see myself through my arms up in a gesture of worship. This is an ancient gesture. This is from Minoan. Then I put both hands on the cold marble altar and lower my forehead to touch the altar. I pause there. It strikes me that I don't know what to do next. I realize the chalice is not on the main altar. Also, the book to read from is not there. I don't call it. What is it, a Bible? Or I don't even know what it is anymore. I send my assistant for both, whoever that is. After several false starts, I am at the main altar. She brought the book and waits anxiously for me to tell her what to do next. I am reading from the book. It is an old book, and so I am unsure what to do. I look over at the priest, who is sitting to the side in a black vestment with gold trim. He's just sitting there with his arms folded. I say to him that I wish I had watched him closer. It's been a long time since I have been to Mass. He smiles, but doesn't help. I start to sing the Agnus Dei, and the whole congregation starts to murmur, "No, no, no." Someone says, "We don't sing that anymore." I finally just say to all of them, "Why don't you just tell me what to do?" I awaken frustrated and humiliated. So, at my associations, this is how I feel in my writing. Nothing, doing something sacred, but not knowing exactly what to do, and not having a mentor. I don't know the process. I have asked for a mentor, but so far, only false ones have shown up. Agnus Dei means Lamb of God. So, that was that. And then, shortly thereafter, then I realized that I needed to go to school and take some classes in the classics, which is exactly what I did. It took 3 years. Took a lot of classes. So, but anyway, thank you. That was a nice recognition of where I was.
Schooling became your mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon? Schooling became your mentor.
Schooling, yes. And the people that I met through that, and the people that I met through the AIA, which has been fabulous and mental support. So. Okay. Thank you.
Well, it looks like you're making a new part of that.
Yeah.
You know, you saw it in the first week, sacrifice for the
Well, and to my, when you were talking about the Aquarius, that really hits home for me as far as this is. It translates into Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, have mercy on us. And it's sort of like we are in the Aquarian age now, so we have to take responsibility for carrying that jug of water. And instead of being in the water, like Gary says, we are responsible for carrying our own water.
I said confession.
That's it. You take it away.
Well, how do you say that about where that circulation becomes more and more? You know, water circulates.
What was you said? You said that began with the snake and ended with the snake. Did you say that something about the Red Book in that respect?
I don't know if I said it, but it sounds good.
You said if you were going to write a book about it, you were going to call it
the Serpent of God. Yeah, the Serpent of God, definitely.
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah. But it's two different snakes. That's the trick.
Yes.
First snake is lust. Second snake is meaning.
Yes, and they have to work together.
And they work together.
Is it two different snakes, or is it one separated and then it's coming together?
Yeah, it would work too, yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Folks, we did it. Let's see the results of sitting ovation. Sit around chat if you'd like, have some more food, whatever you want.